Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our fourth edition of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Well, the Hawkeyes are coming off a disappointing defeat, to say the least, with the 34-27 loss to Arizona in Tucson last weekend. You know, you got to give this team a little bit of credit for being able to come back like it did, considering it was down 27-7 entering halftime. But at the same time, there are just so many mistakes in that game. The coaching staff realizes it. The players realize it. The fans realize it. The Hawkeyes just know they got to give a better effort, not just this week against Ball State, but in future games, you know, when Iowa does enter Big Ten play. But just to kind of recap what happened, it all kind of started sour for the Hawkeyes right away. Opening drive, three and out. Ryan Donahue gets a punt blocked. Arizona starts its opening series on Iowa's 8-yard line. Gets a touchdown just like that at 7-0. Then the Hawkeyes are driving down the field, looking to at least get 3 points, if not tie the game. Ricky Stanzi throws. He claimed it was a high pass, but for a lot of people, including myself, feel that it was as good a throw as you could have made in that situation to Marvin McNutt. Ball got tipped in the air. Trevin Wade, he had the pick six against Iowa last year, had one again this year. Took it back 85 yards for a touchdown. Just like that, it was 14-0 Arizona. Wildcats looked like they were going to punch another touchdown in, make it 21-0. Jeff Tarpinian came up and made a big play, forcing a fumble that was recovered by Jeremiah Hunter inside the red zone. Iowa then responded, going right down the field, getting 7 points, making it 14-7. But then the ensuing kickoff, Arizona took it back 100 yards, and all of a sudden it was a 14-point deficit again, 21-7. Then the defense allowed Arizona to get a couple drives going with where the Wildcats are able to get a couple field goals from Alex Andejas, made it 27-7 at halftime. Then in the third quarter, Ricky Stanzi completed a 37-yard touchdown pass to Darrell Johnson-Culianos. DJK finished with 7 catches for 114 yards and that one touchdown to make it 27-14. Then the fourth quarter is when things really began to go in Iowa's favor. Hawkeyes had to punt, and Sean Prater made probably the one highlight the special teams made all day. He recovered a fumble that was muffed by the Arizona punt returner and gave Iowa the ball in the Arizona 18-yard line. Then the very next play, Stanzi found Marvin McNutt for a touchdown pass to make it 27-21. Initially, the call was ruled incomplete, but then the refs went back and looked at it on instant replay and determined that Marvin was able to get a foot in. So that made it a 6-point game. Then when Arizona got the ball back, Patrick Binns made an unbelievable play, getting a pick six of 20 yards. That tied the game. And all Iowa needed now was an extra point to give the Hawkeyes a 1-point lead, and probably a lead that Iowa just doesn't relinquish at that point in time. However, Arizona was able to block the Trent Mosbrucker PAT, so the game remained tied at 27. Then on the following series for Arizona's offense, the Wildcats were able to go right down the field. Nick Foles was able to complete a touchdown pass with about 9 minutes left in the – no, I'm sorry. 9 minutes left is when Iowa had tied the game. There was about 4 minutes left. I believe it was 3:57 to be precise. That's when Foles threw the touchdown pass that gave Arizona the 34-27 lead. And then we all know what happened at the end there with the Iowa's second-to-last series, technically, because they had one play. They had one additional play at the very end of the game. But for all intents and purposes, it was the last series. And they were just constantly getting pressure from Arizona's defense, and Stanzi kept falling to the ground, getting sacked routinely. And just like that, Iowa is now 2-1. They fall 9 spots in the AP poll, 8 spots in the coaches poll, now they're 18th in both polls, entering Saturday's game at Ball State. Meanwhile, you look at the Cardinals are coming into this game 1-2. They won the season opener against Southeast Missouri State, then lost a couple of games to Liberty at home, and then last week lost a game to Purdue and West Lafayette that really, for the most part, Ball State, you take away that the first quarter, they gave up two touchdown drives to the Boilermakers, but you take that away, Ball State played pretty well. Not obviously not well enough to win, but played, the defense kept them in the game. The offense that the Cardinals have, which, by the way, is led by a true freshman quarterback in Keith Wenning, struggled, to say the least. The big things that really hurt Ball State in that game against Purdue, they had a couple missed field goals in the second quarter, one of which came with very decent field position in Boilermaker territory. Then when Ball State was able to get a touchdown on the board in the third quarter, they missed the extra point. And you just, obviously, they've had some special teams concerns, although from talking to Coach Stan Parrish earlier this week, the feeling is, you know, he likes his special teams. It just struggled against Purdue. So this is, I look at this game, it's a game that I think we all agree Iowa should win and should win rather comfortably. But a lot of it's going to depend on how Iowa starts out and how it comes out of the gate after losing that game to Arizona last week. You know, I think there's that, and I think I'll get to my other big key later in the podcast. But I feel that how Iowa starts out is going to tell us a lot about this team. You know, especially when you consider that this is the final non-conference game before opening up Big Ten play next week with Penn State coming into town for homecoming. We're going to have a great podcast for you here. I got a couple of guests. We have Scott Docterman from the Cedar Rapids Gazette, Doug Zaleski, who covers the Ball State Cardinals for the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana. That's where Ball State University is located. Both of them will be joining our podcast here momentarily. We'll also get to our picks in this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. If you haven't submitted your picks for that yet, you still have plenty of time. You got until 5 p.m. Central on Friday to email them at HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. We'll be right back, and when we return, we will have Scott Docterman joining us, so don't go away. Welcome back to our Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined this week by Scott Docterman of Cedar Rapids Gazette. Scott, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so obviously the big news this week with Iowa is with Jewel Hampton and Bruce Davis both being ruled out for the season and having season-ending surgeries. Just how do you see this affecting both the offense and then, I guess, not just defense but special teams with Bruce?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you look at Jewel Hampton, you look at the positives of what he brought. I mean, he's a physical downhill running back. He's fast. He's quick to the hole. He's a devastating blocker, as we saw in the desert the other night. So losing a player of that caliber, you can't replace that. Adam Robinson's his equal, but when you had a two-headed monster like that, that's really particularly devastating if you do get, you know, if he gets tweaked, if he gets hit. And he's, you know, last year he was out for a couple of games with an ankle, so you don't have that extra reserve there that can be of help. With Bruce Davis, as you mentioned, yeah, he was a force on special teams last year. I remember against Iowa State, you know, he recovered a kickoff, and he really, he was one of the few players who was always in position, always made plays. He was a good backup at middle linebacker, you know, just a good, tough, physical team player, and it's hard to replace that in a sport where sometimes you get, you know, egos in the way, and he didn't seem to have one. So losing two players of that caliber, probably two of your top 50 players on the team, that's going to be difficult for Iowa going forward.
Just now with Adam Robinson basically being like the primary back, how do you see this maybe changing Iowa's play calling on offense? Do you see them sticking to the ratio that they've gone with, or do you see maybe they go deep more?
I think they'll tweak it. I mean, you can't, you know, especially now you get to Big Ten season, you can't all in all change a lot of it. I think, number one, you'll see probably, a true freshman like Marcus Coker get a few more carries, maybe 4 or 5 a game, and not like Jewel, 10 or more. But I think more importantly, what you'll see is maybe on obvious passing downs, you might see the fullback stay in like Brett Morris as opposed to Robinson, or even a Brad Rogers get in there, which will help with protection. option anyway, because there are more, they're blocking backs, but I think also to get him off the field. There may be also a recommendation if you get close to the sideline, step out of bounds. But as far as taking hits when you're in the middle of the field, there's no difference. You have to, you either have to lower your shoulder or you get prepared to get open your body up. So I don't think his running style will change that much, but it'll be in the way that maybe they use him. But I think he'll be on the field because he's the best player in that position. He'll be on the field a lot.
With this game this week against Ball State, do you feel it's kind of maybe showed up at the right time for this team, considering all the circumstances it's facing?
I felt all along that their schedule played out nicely for them because it kind of had the ebbs and flows that you need in a given season. One, open up with a game just to win, you know, that you can play a lot of people in Eastern Illinois. You get a rivalry game after that, which kind of gets the enthusiasm going. You get a really tough road game, win or lose, and then you have kind of a soft return there with Ball State. And you know, you hear the players, coaches talking about that, but then you get your first Big Ten game, which this will allow anybody who needs experience to get experience. Then you get your first Big Ten game against a tough opponent, and then you get a week off. So you kind of reassess the season after five games, heal up people, work a little bit more on fundamentals, and then get recharged for the stretch. So yeah, I think this came at the perfect time, especially after all the injuries.
And just in general, I look at the Big Ten schedule this week, and I mean, I understand why they have these games. It's, you know, to make revenue. Mm-hmm. But you see Iowa playing Ball State. You see pretty much the entire conference playing a bunch of MAC schools at home, aside from Michigan State, Wisconsin playing FCS. Just, I guess, what, if anything, does it say about the conference when you look at a week like this and there aren't any like marquee matchups as we've seen non-conference?
Well, you look at a week like this and you say, yeah, that's why they're going to nine games in the future. Because they're when Eastern Michigan at Ohio State is the ABC game, and it's the end of September, you know that everybody decided to take their pancake before they went to the Big Ten season. And that's kind of what they decided to do. You know, let's get a win, let's get healthy, and move forward. And, you know, with the exception of, you know, Minnesota's got Northern Illinois, which, you know, it's weird to say that might actually be the best game on paper. It's a rough week for the league, and this is why they're going to go to nine games here in a couple of years.
And my final question for you here, when you do look at this Saturday, what do you feel the Hawkeyes need to do in order to, you know, and not just be able to come out with a victory against Ball State, because I think we all expect that, but to just, you know, maybe get back on the right track after what happened in Arizona last week?
I don't think the score is an issue. I think they're going to win regardless. I think the real issue on this game is fundamentals. How do they perform, you know, when they are on the kickoff team, for instance? Do they stay in their lanes? Do they, you know, avoid the blocks? Do they do all those things necessary that will help them be successful? You know, on pass protection, do they see the blitzes, or do they see the way the twists and stunts up front, and can they avoid those and block those? I think those are the big issues this week. It's not about winning, because the win's going to happen. It's about the execution and how they played. So whether the score is 35-7, 56-0, it's going to be, hey, you know, go play by play. Did everybody do what was necessary to get it done?
All right, Scott Docterman from Cedar Rapids Gazette. Scott, thank you very much for the time. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to our Talking Hawks podcast this week, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles, and I'm pleased to be joined this week by Doug Zaleski, who covers the Ball State Cardinals for the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana. Doug, thank you very much for the time.
Sure, no problem.
All right, I guess the first thing I want to ask you here is if you could just kind of give us an assessment of Ball State through three games. I know the Cardinals are coming off a game at Purdue this past weekend that I, from hearing Coach Parrish talk, sounds like they thought they could have won, and just some things didn't go their way.
Yeah, you know, had they played a little better, actually had they played a lot better in some areas, they maybe could have won that game. I think this is a team through three games that is still searching for its identity. I don't think they can hang their hat on any one specific area of the game right now. They're still trying to figure out who they are, what they are, and how they go about accomplishing their goals. They've been pretty good in the special teams area. They have the MAC's top punter, and they have a pretty good passing or a pretty good kick return game. They cover kicks pretty well. Their field goal kicker has been a little inconsistent through three games, but overall their special teams have been pretty good. Their real challenge here in the first three games has been to develop some kind of consistency on offense and defense, and they've fallen short there.
And you talk about just like Ball State kind of still trying to figure out who it is in terms of its identity. How would you assess the mindset of Coach Parrish and of the players that you got that you've gotten the chance to talk to this week as they look at Saturday's game here in Iowa City?
Well, their mindset is they understand this is a tremendous challenge. You know, they played Purdue last week, another Big Ten school, obviously, and they came out of that game thinking that had they played a little bit better, they might have been able to challenge for a win at the end of that game, and that didn't happen. Based on what I saw, I think Purdue is definitely no better than a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team this year. I would even wonder if they could win more than three Big Ten games this year. So that's kind of where Ball State is relative to how they played last week against Purdue. I think they look at the challenge of Iowa this week as a really major, major challenge for their program at this stage in its development. They obviously, the loss last week at Arizona notwithstanding, Iowa's a good football program, one of the top programs in the country, and Ball State understands that this is going to be the toughest team on their schedule this year, without question. So, looking at it that way, they know that they have to play almost a perfect game just to stay relevant in the game and not get blown out in the game. And to do that, they're going to have to play with a lot more consistency than they've shown in the first three games, and that'll be a big challenge for them.
Now, I understand that there's kind of been a quarterback dilemma at Ball State the first few weeks. I believe it was Kelly Page began as a starter, and then Keith Wenning eventually got the opportunity to play and then made the start last week at Purdue. How has that been shaking out from what you've seen?
Well, to give you a little background on it, Kelly Page was their starter last year, the redshirt freshman. He was the successor to Nate Davis, who football fans probably remember the name Nate Davis from the 2008 season when Ball State was nationally ranked. He was the best quarterback in Ball State history. Kelly Page came along last year as the heir apparent at that position, and he didn't necessarily handle that transition well. He tried to live up to the Nate Davis name, the Nate Davis legacy, and as a result, he didn't play very well. And Kelly is the first person to tell you that he got trapped a little bit by those expectations last year. He was a highly valued kid coming out of high school in Texas. He at one time had committed to play at Oregon, and he committed there, eventually ended up at Ball State. So he came in here with some hope, and he didn't really have the kind of season he wanted last year. And then in the seventh game, he broke the thumb on his passing hand, had surgery, and he was out the rest of the season. So he comes into this year as the returning starter, but facing a challenge from an incoming freshman, a true freshman named Keith Wenning. And Kelly Page started the first two games of the year against Southeast Missouri State and Liberty, and didn't play particularly well. His rhythm, timing, the thrower was off. He missed some wide-open targets. And Wenning had displayed in high school and then throughout fall camp this year and in the first two games, because Wenning did play some in the first two games. They wanted to get both of them ready. He had displayed a pretty good passing touch, and I think Ball State's coaches were kind of excited by that. And so Wenning had played well against Liberty 2 weeks ago, and they decided to give him the start against Purdue, which kind of surprised me little bit. I thought they would continue to share time, and then Wenning might take over the job for the MAC opener in 2 weeks, or a week from Saturday here at Central Michigan. That didn't happen. They put him in as the starter against Purdue, and he's expected to start this week at Iowa. So that's kind of where quarterback situation. Winning has displayed a pretty good throwing touch, good accuracy. He doesn't have any experience at the college level. He'll be playing his fourth game Saturday. And I know Ball State's pretty concerned about the pass rush that Iowa can generate. So it'll be a challenge for Winning or Page, and they'll both play a little bit.
I'll just have a couple more questions here for you. You mentioned the concern that Ball State has with facing Iowa's pass rush, and I believe I saw it was Cameron Lowry, the left tackle that tore his ACL, is out for the year. How does that impact what Ball State wants to do offensively, not having him be the guy lining up against Adrian Claiborne?
Well, that's a significant impact right now. Ball State went into the year with seven offensive linemen that they felt could play, two backups that they were comfortable playing. And Cam Lowry, the left tackle, was considered their best offensive lineman. Ball State coach Stan Parrish called him Ball State's best lineman last year. He thought he was his best lineman this year, and he suffered a torn ACL early in the game against Purdue. He's done for the year, so they've had to take Dan Manick, who was backing up at right tackle, and he played last week after the injury to Lowry at left tackle, and Manick will start at left tackle again this week here now against Iowa. And they're obviously concerned about that. You lose your best lineman in Cam Lowry at left tackle, and you replace him with the backup right tackle. So he's the guy that protects the blind side of the quarterback, and they're pretty concerned because of Iowa's ability to rush the passer. And Ball State's line is pretty young. There's a senior and a junior in it, but the three other guys are sophomores, so they have great concerns about Iowa's pass rush ability.
All right, and my final question for you here, when you look at Saturday's game, you touched on consistency being something Ball State needs to work on. Is there anything else you feel the Cardinals need to be able to do in order to at least stay with Iowa and keep it a competitive game? If not, you know, actually be able to get out of here with a win?
Well, obviously, they're going to have to control the ball a little bit. They can't have a lot of three and outs and let Iowa's offense get back on the field. So that's one thing they're especially concerned about. They haven't been real proficient at extending drives. They're not very good offensively on third down. They're not very good defensively on third down. So that's a double whammy. And so offensively, they would really like to be able to possess the ball a little bit, gain some first downs, and if they don't score points, at least keep Iowa's offense off the field. Defensively, obviously they're going to have to stop the run, even though Jewel Hampton is out. I'm sure Iowa's going to test Ball State's run defense, see if they can run a little bit. I'm sure Iowa's also going to test Ball State's pass defense. Ball State hasn't generated much of a pass rush in three games. They only have three sacks. Only one of those sacks has been by a defensive lineman. So Ball State's getting no pass rush up front. And they're somewhat suspect in coverage in the back end of their defense. Last week against Purdue, they rotated four cornerbacks in and out of the game, trying to find somebody who was capable of playing at a decent level for an extended period. So there's an issue there. So that's Ball State's biggest concern, is they try to find some consistency here early in the year.
All right. As Doug Zaleski of the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana. Doug, thank you very much for the time, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to our Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'd like to thank both of my guests this week, Scott Docterman of Cedar Rapids Gazette and Doug Zaleski of the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana. Now, without further ado, we'll get into our picks. Just a reminder, if you haven't submitted your picks for this week's HawkeyeDrive.com pick 'em, you still got until 5 p.m. Central on Friday to do so. All you got to do is go to HawkeyeDrive.com. check out the 24 Heisman Road link, and then at the bottom you'll see Pick 'em. Click on that. That gives you a list of 10 games, and then you just submit your picks to me via email, HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to give a score with your Iowa Ball State prediction, because that's what I'm going to use to break any ties that may exist. So now let's get right to it. We'll start with the first game we got here, Virginia Tech visiting Boston College. The Hokies are 1-2, finally getting a win over East Carolina last week after starting off 0-2 inexplicably. Meanwhile, Boston College comes into this game 2-0. It's in Chestnut Hill. I like the Eagles, and especially with, you know, Ryan Williams from Virginia Tech. He got hurt last week. I don't personally know the extent of his injury, but I can tell you from what I saw, it didn't look good. And even if he is able to go, I just think Boston College has a good enough defense to keep Virginia Tech in check. And I just see the Eagles taking care of business at home, so I'm going to go with BC. The number one team in the land, the Alabama Crimson Tide, 3-0. Visiting Fayetteville to play the 10th-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks. Arkansas coming off a huge road win last week at Georgia. Ryan Mallett threw a touchdown pass in the final seconds to Greg Childs to defeat the Dogs between the hedges. But this is a different opponent. Georgia, Alabama is no Georgia. Alabama got Mark Ingram back last week against Duke, and he had 100 yards rushing on the Blue Devils in the first quarter. So I just look at that. I don't see how Arkansas's defense is going to be able to stop Alabama's offense. I think Ryan Mallett will have a decent game, but I think Alabama's O is just going to be too much between, you know, Ingram and Trent Richardson and Julio Jones. I just don't see how Arkansas is going to stop those guys. So I'm going to pick the Crimson Tide to get the win up in Fayetteville. The 16th-ranked Stanford Cardinal, 3-0. They're going to South Bend to face Notre Dame for the annual game at the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame's coming off a really heartbreaking loss to Michigan State last week. The Spartans pulled off a fake field goal in overtime that resulted in a touchdown and winning the game 34-31. Stanford, on the other hand, is just clicking on all cylinders right now. They pounded Wake Forest at home last week. Andrew Luck might be one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the entire country right now. And I just see Stanford going into South Bend taking care of business against Notre Dame, so I'm going to pick Stanford to win. The one Big Ten game I got on our docket this week features the 23rd-ranked Penn State Nittany Lions hosting Temple. Penn State's 2-1. Temple's 3-0. Temple is considered by many to be one of the favorites to win the Mid-American Conference this year. I think the Owls are going to give the Nittany Lions all they can handle, but with that said, I think Evan Royster will be a big reason why Penn State comes away with a victory and will be 3-1 coming to Kinnick Stadium next week. Number 8, Oklahoma, 3-0, traveling to Cincinnati to face a Bearcat. Cincy's coming off a rough loss to NC State last week. I don't see this being much of a game. I think the Bearcats will keep it close early, but eventually I think Oklahoma's just going to explode offensively. Guys like Landry Jones, DeMarco Murray, I just see the Sooners coming out with a win. And it's a big game for Oklahoma considering you got Texas next week. You don't want to look past a team like Cincinnati that's had success in the Big East the last couple of years. You got the in-state matchup between Northern Iowa and Iowa State. I just had to include this game this week. The Cyclones are coming off a difficult loss to K-State last week down at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. UNI comes in 1-1. This game's at Jack Trice Stadium. I'm going to pick Iowa State to win. I just don't see UNI having enough this year to beat a team like the Cyclones. So I think Iowa State bounces back and gets the W. 12th-ranked South Carolina Gamecocks, the 17th-ranked Auburn Tigers. They meet in the Plains. Both teams are 3-0. I'm going to pick the Gamecocks to get the road victory. I think they're going to be emotionally invested in this game, considering what happened earlier this week with the shooting death of former South Carolina wideout Kenny McKinley. That's a rough situation, period. And I just think South Carolina, I think the guys on that team are going to want to win that game for him and win that game in his honor. And I think this is the kind of game, now that South Carolina appears to have a running game, this is the kind of game I think Steve Spurrier is going to just out-coach Gene Chizik. And that's why I like South Carolina to win this game on the road. The big game Saturday night, features the third-ranked Boise State Broncos, 2-0, hosting number 24 Oregon State. It's the first home game of the year for Boise State. I like the Broncos in this game because, honestly, I just don't see the Beavers being mentally prepared. I think you see them painting their practice field blue to get ready for the blue turf. And then, you know, Boise State's head coach Chris Peterson made the comment, hey, we got them right where we want them. You know, we're in their heads. I think the blue turf is in Oregon State's head. I think Boise State, if it jumps out to a lead early, this game could be busted wide open. And so I like the Broncos to take care of business at home. Finally, we have number 22, West Virginia, traveling down to Death Valley to face the 15th-ranked LSU Tigers. Both teams here are 3-0. West Virginia, a couple weeks ago, struggled against Marshall, but found a way to win that game. Looked pretty decent against Maryland last week. LSU, you know, I'm still not sold on LSU, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but I'm going to take them to win this game at home. I just don't see, even with Noel Devine, I don't see how West Virginia can win this game down in Baton Rouge. So I'm going to take the Tigers to win, especially with it being a night game as well. All right, finally, we have the number 18 Iowa Hawkeyes. A little different than hearing number nine Iowa Hawkeyes, but no, the 18th-ranked Iowa Hawkeyes, 2-1, hosting Ball State this week at Kinnick Stadium. I think the biggest key to this game for Iowa is to convert third downs. It did a horrible job of this last week against Arizona, especially early on. It didn't do that well with this at all. The offense just struggled moving the football, period. Purdue did really good in third down situations against Ball State last week, and that was a big reason why the Boilermakers were able to beat the Cardinals. So I think if Iowa can offensively, you know, win the third downs, you know, and keep the chains moving, I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on Ball State off when the Cardinals' offense takes the field. And I just see Iowa proving to be a little too much for Ball State in this game. I'm going to say the Hawkeyes win 34-7. And a reminder as well, this is a throwback game. The Hawkeyes are going to be wearing uniforms to honor the 1958 Rose Bowl team. Or excuse me, the 58 team that won the 1959 Rose Bowl team. That had guys like Randy Duncan and Bob Jeter and what have you. Coached by Forrest Ebershefsky. So, yeah, I'm going to say the Hawkeyes win 34-7. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Again, we offer a 3-day free trial to HawkeyeDrive.com, or you can sign up for a monthly subscription at $9.99 a month or a yearly subscription at $89.99 a year. Both subscriptions have recurring payments on them. I'd like to, again, thank Scott Docterman from the Cedar Rapids Gazette, Doug Zaleski from the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana, for being our guest this week. We'll be back again next Thursday to preview Iowa's game with Penn State. I'm Brendan Stiles, and thanks for tuning in.